All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Public Health Data Systems Task Force meeting. Today we're going to have continued discussion on the final recommendations to be presented at the HITECH meeting next week. Let me chairs, Janet Hamilton.
Sorry, Cassandra, I think you cut out for a little bit, but I think we're in roll call, and this is Janet, I'm here.
Oh, great, yes, Janet. Carolyn Peterson.
Good morning.
Daniel Brooks.
Good morning.
Denise Chrysler.
Hello, I'm here.
Jim Daniel. Steve Eichner.
Good morning, present.
Claudia Grossman. Steve Henrich. Jim Jarrett. John Kansky.
I'm here.
Brian Karras.
Good morning.
Stephen Lane. Neil Lapras.
Good morning.
Les Leonard. Denise Love.
Here.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Lynn McDonald. Aaron Mary. Larry Mole. Abby Sears. And Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much. Janet, I'll hand it over to you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you all for joining our call this morning and also, of course, for adding in an additional meeting this week. We are really looking forward to the conversation today. There has been a tremendous amount of work by all of you, and we are very appreciative of it. We are on track to be presenting our recommendations to the HITECH next week, and really wanted to use our meeting time today because there has been such a tremendous amount of work by all of you, especially over the course of the last a couple of weeks and since our last meeting, to review our recommendations and identify any gaps that we feel that we did not address, and ensure that we all as a group have time to look at these different recommendations together and have some consensus about where we are as a work group. So we are not going to be able to take on new big areas for discussion today. I think if there were some areas that we didn't get to and folks want to be sure that we can highlight those in the appendix and or potentially in the opening section of places that we feel need further work, we can certainly ensure that we also have time to review and comment on those, but we're not really going to be covering new ground today. So really looking forward to the discussion, and I will turn it over to you, Carolyn, for your opening and welcoming remarks.
Thanks, Janet. So welcome, everyone, to our last meeting. I'm really excited everyone was able to come today to help us wrap up this work and see what we've accomplished. It's hard to believe how quickly the time has passed and how much we've done. Just to kind of review where we are, we've been gathering input with the homework for 6 weeks. We've been working on the recommendations in groups for about 6 weeks and working in the shared document for about 3 weeks now. We've really got it quite filled out. And we discussed these important topics and our potential recommendations at 10 task force meetings, and we've heard from experts at a day-long hearing. So lots going on. As Janet mentioned, today we're going to be reviewing the draft recommendations group by group for broad approval to be included in the report that goes to the HITACH. We're going to be looking at the RECs in groups by topic because we have more than 60 individual recommendations. And if we look at them individually, that's probably not doable in the time that we have together. We will not be reviewing individual recommendations in depth or expanding the draft recommendations or taking up new topic areas that we haven't discussed previously. What we want to do today is reach a broad consensus about kind of a general agreement at the group level rather than a personal agreement with every single recommendation that's in the report. We know that often there are differences of opinion with particular recommendations at the personal level. That's pretty typical with these kinds of task forces. And if you feel strongly about something in the RECs, we really encourage you to share your thoughts during the public comment period at the July 14 HITACH meeting, or just to paste your comments into the online public chat that runs during that meeting at any time. In that way, your perspective will be captured and included in the documentation that's used in future work around public health data systems. And with that, let's get started. If we could pull over the draft recommendation document, that would be really helpful.
And while we're pulling over the draft recommendation document, Steve Eichner, did you have your hand raised? Did I see that and now it's gone? I just want to double check.
Yes, ma'am, you did. I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank the ONC staff for all the work they've contributed to helping the task force accomplish its work in a really rapid pace. So thank you so much to the ONC staff. We could not have done what we did without your help.
Hear, hear. So well said, Steve. Thank you.
And I'll third that as well. Particularly in the last week, we've really covered a lot of ground, and the staff has been more than generous with their time and assistance. So I think we can probably scroll through the charge section. This is just the background that we have covered in several previous meetings, laying out our charge and some of the areas that we looked at, and also acknowledging that there are some topics we did not get to and some that are out of the scope of what we were doing. We can also scroll past the executive summary, I think, to the immediate docs. There we go. So what is coming up first in the draft are the cross-cutting recommendations. These are the things that we kind of see as covering many areas, not specific to one particular aspect of public health IT. I'll give everyone a moment to look at those docs. You can also, you might find it easier to review them in the document on the server as well. That is open for viewing. We can scroll down just a little bit to pick up the additional, if there are additional. And a little further, please.
This is Steve. Just to the comment, I agree we should have a appendix with all the acronyms.
Thanks, Steve. Brett and I were just discussing that before we started the call, and we are going to work on that. I think that's a good idea, too. John Kansky, I see your hand is raised. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is regarding recommendation number 2, and I in no way want to dilute or pollute the message there. This is consistent with prior comments that I made. Would it be possible to consider a phrase where it says that ONTI should work with federal partners to create a health data ecosystem plan that fully supports public health during response to high confidence public health threats and generally supports public? I'm trying to, I don't think there's any, that's a great recommendation. Are we trying to say that there should be an ecosystem plan specifically to prepare for high consequence public health threats, or that we think that there should be a health data ecosystem plan for public health, including preparedness for high consequence public health threats? If the focus is on the high consequence preparedness, then I'm totally fine with that, but I just wanted to ask. Thank you.
The executive order, the title is Executive Order on Ensuring a Data-Driven Response to COVID-19 and Future High-Consequence Public Health Threats. So I think that's where we took the initial framing for that, because that's what the task force was asked to respond to.
That's fine. I was reading the charge and interpreting that more broadly, but that's no problem.
Hi, this is Danielle Brooks, and my apologies. My Adobe is having a slow time connecting, so I'm not able to raise my hand. Would this be an opportunity to, in the last kind of sentence of recommendation 2, it reads, implemented in healthcare should include a public health lens at outset to ensure individual as well as population health needs are met. Could we sprinkle that last kind of phrase, are met in an equitable approach? I just don't want to lose the focus on oftentimes when it's a population health view that doesn't quite include equity. Equity is kind of divergent in a way from population health overall. So just making sure we keep that kind of equity by design in that overall recommendation. Thank you.
That's just been added, Danielle.
Fab.
I know you can't see Adobe, but it was just added in.
Fabulous. And, okay, thank you.
Yep. And I see Jim Daniel's hand is up.
Yeah, thanks. So in recommendation 3 on E, we just talk about working with FDA there, but wouldn't – maybe it wasn't 3, maybe it was the next one. There's one that was talking about for labs working with – yeah, I think it's that one. Yeah, E there. You just got CDC and FDA for the diagnostic test and providers. I mean, when we're talking about labs and overall, CMS, I think, is an important component of that as well. Like, we got to make sure that we're working with the right regulatory agencies there for labs, because I think, you know, some of the things that we're getting at are, you know, some of the missing data elements, you know, especially when things are coming from commercial labs, and that would be, I believe, regulated by CMS.
Okay, that's been added in as well. Thank you. And can we scroll a little further to pick up the last piece in this section?
And this is Janet Hamilton, and I'll just add, I think, you know, it's really critical for you all as members of the task force to look at this just in that way to make sure that we do have all the key players and the different actors in these different recommendations. And I realize this is a lot to go through and ask, but that's exactly the kinds of comments as well that we really need. So thank you, Jim, and others.
That's right. We are so close to the home stretch. It's great to add the last little bits that really tie it up.
Hi, this is Danielle again. Oh, so sorry. I can't see the thing, so I have no idea.
How about Bryant and then Danielle?
Hi, this is one question I have is whether or not on the comment of adding the appropriate players, is it only federal agency players that we need to make sure get included, or are other, like I'm on the lab regulatory front, I was thinking about CAP, College of American Pathology, who does, you know, auditing and certification of laboratories. Do we need to identify those bodies, or, you know, OMC can't really demand activities from them? So I'm not sure if that's appropriate or not.
I think we give ONC more flexibility when we don't specify non-governmental agencies. Then they have more direction to work with whomever is appropriate for whatever is being done. And
okay. And
frankly, if there is other legislation in play that changes things, then we have recommendations that might be prescriptive in a way that's not applicable. I'm confident that they will reach out to the players that are involved. Why don't you go ahead, Danielle?
I was just going to comment in A. I would recommend putting payers in that component. I know they're listed below, but payers have a ton of information in terms of outreach to individuals during a public health concern. And so I think it'd be important to call them out because I see like health systems, but payers are, you know, have that stuff at the fingertips. So I would recommend that. Thank you.
Thanks, Danielle. And I see Denise has her hand up. Go ahead, Denise Love.
Yes, I think I want to echo Danielle. And I think under two, is it that I'm seeing at the top of the page? I just had a question. Require non-clinical data from providers, and I wanted to echo Danielle, perhaps payers there too. But is that too non-specific, or is that by intent? I'm just trying to say it reads like public health could require other data as we need it, but not specified. But it just, as a provider, I'd be concerned about that. Can you help me understand? It just seems like other data as needed. Is that how it's supposed to read?
Which line is this that you're referring to?
The very under two, F2.
Yes, as needed. As needed. Yeah. Yes. That's I think it's F3 actually, as needed.
Okay. And so that, I just wanted to be clear, it just seems a little everything else not included, but I also would include payers.
Thanks. With that, we've had some good comments. Let's move to the next section.
I think that's the one I was talking about right there, yeah.
I think this is the section on syndromic surveillance. I'll give everyone a chance to look at that for a moment. And I see John Kansky's hand is up. Go ahead.
Thank you. Just asking, I had, and it may be captured elsewhere, but I had suggested an additional syndromic surveillance recommendation. The recommendation that's there is related to non-traditional data sources, and I was suggesting a recommendation related to leveraging automation of reporting to lower burdens, leveraging more normal traditional data sources. Did that get considered?
ONC leads, how was that addressed? I don't recall. I recall seeing the comment, but I don't recall what was done.
I think that it appears to me that the header section is broader than the dot points that follow. I don't think it's just the non-traditional data that this is trying to refer to.
Oh, right. Because I see where my comment was incorporated.
Yeah.
Right below that one, where it says lower the burden and increase the completeness and accuracy of surveillance by leveraging clinical data and reporting automation, that's my comment. So we need to be careful because the overarching recommendation refers to explore traditional and non-traditional data sources. Should the ONC collaborate with CDC and CDC to explore traditional?
Sorry,
and
John, this is Janet Hamilton, and I just added that traditional and non-traditional to see if that would better address, I think, what the group was going for. And I think there's the automation piece that you are mentioning. There's also, inpatient and outpatient. I think those are traditional data sources. So I'm just wondering if this, and as the group looks at this, if that's really getting a little bit more at what people were thinking the recommendation should be.
That certainly addresses my comment, and I will go back to reading and see if that fits with all the others. Thank you.
Janet, this is Bryant. I think that we probably should be explicit on traditional, since there may be some misunderstandings about early syndromic surveillance versus more recent. And I thought we had made a comment that we wanted ONC to explore inpatient as well as what's currently incentivized under meaningful use of emergency department. Is that in there and I'm just missing it?
I think it's listed in one of the bullets, the third bullet down, references the inpatient data.
Good.
Highlighted on the screen right now.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Arian.
Thank you. I have the same comments that it seems like we've missed the broader deployment of ADT-based surveillance. And so we might want to just relook. I think adding traditional here helps. I thought we were looking at broader deployment and additional certification for ADT-based surveillance as one of the policy recommendations. So we might want to explore breaking this set of recommendations up into a broader deployment of traditional, aka ADT-based surveillance, and deployment of more expansive surveillance.
But syndromic surveillance has gone beyond ADT surveillance.
I completely agree. My point is that we might want to break up our recommendations to look at broader deployment of and broader applicability of the existing the ADT-based mechanisms for syndromic surveillance, as well as recommendations about broadening surveillance as a whole. That was my point.
This is Clem. Could I weigh in?
Let's go to Clem, and then Denise Love, and then I'm going to encourage us to continue moving.
Okay. So in terms of the syndromic, I mean, the broadening, there's other good sources, and maybe it'd be worth kind of naming a couple, like pharmacy. And there are places that collect all the pharmacy transactions already automatically. So I don't know how hard it is, like Surescripts, how hard it is to get them to help. But so we could do it that way. The other thing is the automation, I think, is crisp enough. I mean, one of the things that that Jen's doing in Indiana, they actually take the results as they come out of the lab and send them directly, I mean, the ones that are reportable, directly to the public health. And that's the kind of thing you can do. I'm not sure what – I mean, you may also want to poke around in the medical records and pull them, but there's a lot of opportunity to do it direct from the lab.
Thanks, Clem. Let's go to Denise Love.
Yes, I just wanted to point out that not some of the non-traditional data sources are not real-time. So the first bullet, you know, does say provide real-time access to healthcare data, which is fine, but do we want another bullet or a clarification or as timely as possible? Because I don't want to exclude some not real-time data sources that are important, that have lagging importance for pandemic.
Thanks, Denise. I just added when possible. Provide
Thank
real-time
you.
Access to healthcare data when possible.
And Carolyn, I'm sorry, one last point. I know we're moving on. Just a bullet that says support appropriate use of machine learning. We may want to... if we can add a phrase in there to reduce algorithmic bias, I just want to make sure we call that out because that is a massive challenge in machine learning. Thank you.
Yes, we'll add that at the bottom of the list. Let's start on the laboratory and case reporting section now. If you could scroll through the document, ONC. Thank you. So we have several recommendations in this section, and ONC is periodically scrolling through for us. I added that bullet point you requested, Danielle, to the syndromic surveillance section, so that's in.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kit.
And while we're scrolling, Arian, why don't you go ahead with your comment?
Thank you. Certainly endorse all of these recommendations. It might be helpful to provide a cross-reference to the task force output from the first incarnation of the ISP task force, where we made recommendations. We made very, very similar recommendations relating to broad-scale deployment of orders and results. And there's a fair amount of detail that's in that report for cross-reference. Thanks.
Is there a particular place where you suggest inserting that?
Yeah, I can. In the first section, the first set of recommendations about deployment of orders and results, and I can. I'll go find the formal transmittal. As a reference for consideration.
Okay, that would be really helpful. Thanks. Let's go to Nell.
Hi, I had a comment in here as well, but wanted to get additional clarification on the goal of 8C in underneath the lab reporting requirements. I think certainly want to make sure that from an EHR perspective that we are, wherever possible, facilitating ease of implementation and maintenance when it comes to public health reporting. I do worry about the wording, though. When a system has been deployed at a site, it is not always, you know, depending on the implementation process for an organization, it's not always the EHR that's making configuration changes. It could be the organization. And so imposing additional requirements on EHR vendors to require certification after system deployment, I think will pose to be a challenge for organizations. I would recommend focusing, if we can, instead on onboarding processes or automating testing to facilitate the appropriate content exchange, if that's the goal of this recommendation.
We can revisit a way to wordsmith that. It may be that the best we can do is to say that how the certification process fits in is to be determined and requires additional consideration. I know there's a lot around some of those pieces. Go ahead, Janet.
Yeah, sorry, Carolyn. And I'm just wondering if you had maybe specific language you wanted to suggest for us in this. I think the intent of this recommendation was trying to get at the perspective of public health, which is that there will be an onboarding process, which might include, for example, you know, reporting of laboratory results or other things. And then as time goes on, the healthcare system might make a change within their EHR vendor system, and then we see a break in the public health reporting. And the break can be for very long periods of time as well. So I think that was the intent of this, but maybe you have some language to add to get at that a little bit more specifically, or maybe others who also worked on this language have some thoughts on how to address the comment from Nell.
Yeah, and this is Nell. I can certainly provide some language. I think thought I would have about how to best accomplish that would be to see if there's a way to try and automate some testing wherever possible, so that the burden, or not burden, but the work effort as organizations are making changes would be on that organization to regression test instead of on public health. The other option, which I think we've seen some success with in the IAS world, would be to focus on using errors to identify and more proactively course correct if there is an issue when it comes to you know, acknowledgments or other ways that we can do content error reporting. So I can work on that and get that out to you right after this meeting.
Thanks, Nell. That's
great.
Really
thanks,
helpful.
Thanks, Nell. Maybe one other thing I'll just ask for you to consider too is if we have any recommendations about, you know, how long downtimes can and should be as well. I mean, I think there have definitely been times on the side of public health where they have experienced months and months. And obviously we would like to have that kind of partnership with the vendors so that we don't end up in those kinds of situations.
We can review the language and comment from Nell, how to incorporate that. But I'm going to be a little heavy-handed and push.
Yeah, please, Carolyn.
No, we just have like, you know, 50
got a
more
lot.
Recommendations.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brian.
So, I'm wondering if the word certification, which can be a costly process in the deployment process, could be replaced with, you know, regular quality assurance testing. And I totally agree with you. I think ERA in the immunization world has come up with some very clever automated testing scripts to make sure that things are compliant post-deployment that feel like we've said several times could be a really good model for all of the public health reporting measures. But I like one thing that Janet, that you mentioned, that it's not just a one and done. I think it needs to be a quality assurance that's done on a regular cadence so that as things evolve and change or new codes get added, that we make sure that they don't get missed.
Yeah, Brian, just for the sake of moving forward, I know we're trying to. Do you want me to maybe email you offline and we can try and work through the wording to make sure you're comfortable
with it?
That'd
be fabulous.
Okay, yeah, I'll email you.
Thank you. One last call for any last brief comment for this section.
Just to note, I dropped the reference in the chat.
Perfect. Thanks, Arian. That's great. Okay. Seeing no hands and hearing no other voices, let's move on to the next section. If you could scroll up on Wednesday, that would be great. So now we've come to health equity. And in this section, we have a couple screenfuls to review, so I'll give you a minute to look at that before asking ONC to scroll up. And if everyone could mute your phones while you're not talking, that would also be good. And I see Steve Eichner has his hand up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just as a general comment, I think some standardization throughout the document with STLT and state and local health agencies, like, is probably something we need to standardize throughout, because usually we're reading the same thing throughout, but we've interspersed different ways of describing that.
Yes. Earlier this morning, before the call, when we were logging on, I spoke with Brett and Brenda and Katie from ONC about that, and we do have some of that standardization as well as the abbreviations list and, you know, some other tidying up in terms of the formatting. I know it's still kind of in a working format, but we will work on that.
Exactly. As expected, but just observing.
Yep, no. Appreciate the comment.
I do have one comment. This is Danielle. With letter C, it's not only just data collection standards, but I do, and I may have missed this, so I apologize if it's buried within the recommendations, but to make sure that underrepresented geographic locations, demographic groups have access to, you know, necessary technologies to foster the exchange of data, just making sure that they have the right HIE component, the HR component, and making sure that there's resource allocation for areas that may be under-resourced to be able to participate in this data exchange. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel. We're making some edits on the screen right now. I know you probably can't see that, but.
Nope, I'm trying my best. I'm still getting into Adobe.
It can be grumpy some days, I agree. And then I see Arian has his hand up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, apologies for not catching this if it's here, but did we get the point that individuals should be involved wherever possible in the specification of their own identifying information?
Self-reported
information and, you know, validating information.
And I'm not sure if it's necessary to call out, but to your point, you know, I think oftentimes people scrape like census data, which is out of place. So it's kind of like whatever the most, you know, real-time data access is the best data. I'm not quite sure how to articulate that, but I think that that's a great point.
Yeah, I think I was the one who worked on the editing of the input about how you classify yourself. I think that was Monday night, so we can revisit and be sure that that is in there. But I did a number of those Monday night, a number of comments.
I wonder too, Arianne and Carolyn, is there's the individual section, and I think between individual engagement and the health equity, we just want to make sure that's cross-referenced.
I think that would solve it as well if it's addressed in the individual engagement section, a forward reference.
We can do that. I know in some ways they do overlap, and some of the same kinds of concepts are mentioned in both places. We can check for alignment about that. Let's go to Nell. Oh.
Just very quickly, I thought this had been added yesterday, and I'm not seeing it, so I might have missed it, but is there a comment about clarifying what the appropriate source of this data is and making sure we have recommendations to reduce any duplication of documentation wherever possible.
This is Katie from ONC. I do remember adding that. I'm just trying to find it on the screen here. But I do remember incorporating that into the document yesterday.
It may be in the individual engagement section.
Yeah, it might be a different section, but I'll note that and make sure that it didn't get lost.
Thanks, Katie.
This is Danielle. Just making sure, just for consistency, I up in the top, we kind of talk about all of the different demographic data in the first recommendation point, race, ethnicity, disability, and so on. I'm not quite sure for the ease of editing, because all of that should just be replicated throughout all of these recommendations in the letters. And so I'm not sure if it's easy for shorthand for the editors to kind of make sure that this is all included, if it should just be replicated, but just so we emphasize, you know, the importance of that consistent collection. And then I'm not sure if this is the right place to put it, because I know it states that we're going to work with other organizations to ensure the data collection is kind of consistent. But the recommendation of trying to choose ethnicity over race for better classification of demographic information, if that would be an appropriate thing to state in this area as well.
I hear you in terms of the replication, and we will see if we can standardize that. I mean, we should. It should be doable. Can you point to the recommendation, or do you recall which recommendation it was where that those phrases were stated correctly, so we know what to propagate throughout the document?
Sure, I think up in the top, and again, I'm working on the Google Doc, so I apologize if I'm not placing it first, but right under the health equity banner, it says race, ethnicity, recommendation 11, ONCCC, and SCLT should work to ensure a consistent collection of agreed upon standards for, and then it's highlighted race, ethnicity, disability, condition, and resulting impacts of orientation. And you can even just kind of make a parenthetical to say, like, equity demographic data or something to that. And that way that can just be standard throughout all of that, if that's easier. But I think it's important, because even in the disability section, you know, there is different equitable treatment and disparities in disability based on race and ethnicity and language, so on and so forth.
No, that's perfect. That's exactly the clarification we needed. that's in recommendation number 11 in the main body. Mm-hmm. So that's great. Thank you. Any other comments from task force members before we move on? I don't see any hands raised. Is there anyone who's just on the phone with a comment?
Danielle, I just want to applaud the equity consideration. This is it makes me so very happy. So thank you guys for being so open to all the comments in response. I just really appreciate the team's work on this.
Thank you for putting in the time to provide all the feedback and to help us phrase these things in the right ways and be sure that we're catching any inconsistencies or places where things are not well aligned. The expertise is really valuable, and it's made the document much better. So seeing no other hands, I'd suggest we move to the next section. It looks like that would be standards, development, and adoption. We just have one there, I think. Go ahead and take a look at that. And does anyone have any comments? I don't see any hands raised. Go ahead, Denise Love.
Yes, I don't have a problem with the recommendation per se. I know that the National Committee on Vital and Health Statistics is working on some of these things, and I don't know if it warrants mentioning or if it's implied in the recommendation. Here, but I just wanted to acknowledge that this is the standards subcommittee of NCVHS will be and is working on similar trajectories.
Thanks, Denise. We can make a note of that in that recommendation. Let's go to Bryant.
So I think that it's more than just Firebase standards that need further enhancement, development, and ongoing support from ONC and other federal agencies. I made several comments that it doesn't seem like they got incorporated, and maybe the acronym I use, the SNI framework, I feel like ONC in the early days of meaningful use invested in interoperability and standards framework, SNI framework, to convene vendors, public health, and clinical partners to really prove out and create implementation guides around standards that were in development. And that kind of proving ground really was beneficial, and it seems to be lacking currently. But it can apply not just to Firebase standards. Some of our V2 and CDA-based solutions really could benefit from continued support in development. And public health needs support getting to those tables.
Thanks, Bryant. We will make that adjustment in that recommendation. I do want to note that some of the recommendations that were initially in the standards development section got moved to other places, to the cross-cutting and infrastructure sections. So I don't know that the feedback's been lost. I think we've just shifted it on you and made it appear in unexpected places.
Okay.
Let's go to Steve Eichner, please.
Thank you. Really quickly, I think as we're looking at case investigation, automation is fantastic, but we also need to link this to some extent to a library of services to support case investigation, whether they be automated retrieval, we should mention or at least refer to projects like MedMorph as a related technology, and looking at tools like Pulse, again, a different project that is not fully automated retrieval, but as another part of a library of tools to facilitate collecting and getting additional information about cases, because I think it's about case reports, because I think it's not necessarily a one-size-fits-all approach. So we need another blade in our jackknife, but not necessarily a single blade to solve case investigation and collecting additional information. I just want to make sure we don't lose that idea.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. Clem, I see your hand up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I want to reinforce Brian's comments about the other standards, because today lab results are only delivered by V2, almost exclusively, and all the material that you get is V2, so that's got to be supported. And it's similar with all immunization standard specifications. They're all V2. So I'd like to reinforce the fact that keep those things healthy with support. Thank you.
Thanks, Clem. I don't see any other hands raised, so this is a short section, so I think why don't we move forward, because I know that some of what was in this section was moved to other ones, and we'll see it there. Just give ONC a moment to finish this comment, and then we'll scroll up the screen. So now we're heading into funding mechanisms. And we have 10 recommendations here. 5 of them are on the screen, and I'll just give everyone a moment to take a look at those. Now we're scrolling up down into the second part of these funding mechanism recommendations. And I see Arian has his hand up. Go ahead.
Thank you. So on recommendation 21, I think the point that we discussed was that we should encourage public health to use both state and national shared infrastructure HIEs wherever possible to address the mission. The notion of encouraging HIEs to adopt funding sustainability models is definitely something that HIEs reason that we don't have this is in areas where we don't is not because HIEs resist it or resist funding sustainment. It's that we don't have the appropriate mechanisms to flow appropriate public health dollars into HIEs, both at the state and national level, like APHL. So I thought our proposal was to encourage public health, both CDC and at the state, local, tribal, et cetera, level, to use HIEs both at the state and national level wherever appropriate to fulfill the mission. And that addresses sustainment. Thanks.
I will let Janet respond on the funding mechanism piece, because I know she's been quite involved in working on the language.
Yeah, thanks. And I'd be happy to work a little bit more on this language with you as well. I think there's two things. I think encouraging public health to use HIEs when they're available, but there are some instances on the side of public health where HIEs have presented models that charge public health very large fees.
Understood.
And
okay.
So,
yep.
So I think trying to get at that balance, and maybe you and I can come up with a better way to handle both of those. So if HIEs are available in shared infrastructure, that's great, but also that HIEs present options to public health that are affordable.
That makes every bit of sense. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's go to Jim Daniel.
Hi. So just on recommendation 20, I was reading through the rest of the recommendations to see if we captured this elsewhere, but scalability is such a really important component of our recommendations, and it seems to be almost just like an afterthought in this one recommendation. So maybe moving scalability up to the first sentence as well, and I think, you know, something about, you know, cloud technology to support scalability would be good within this recommendation too. It's just, we know that so many of the issues we faced with so many of our health departments across the country were because their systems didn't scale. And this seems to be the one place where we got that addressed. So I just think, I can help wordsmith later if you guys want, but I just think scalability and utilizing the cloud need to be emphasized a little bit more in this recommendation.
Thanks, Jim. Let's go to Steve Eichner.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I think it's important that public health have a lead role in defining what its needs are with respect to support from HIEs rather than HIEs necessarily taking a lead and telling in public health what its needs might be. So I'd be happy to work with you quickly to update some of that language. There's a lot of strength and a lot of opportunity to leveraging HIEs to meet public health's needs. But understanding that relationship and establishing a working relationship that benefits both parties is important, but it's really that ensuring that the data and activities meet the needs of public health, which is the customer in this sense, becomes important rather than being given a set of tools that may not support what public health is focused on.
Thanks, Steve. Clem, go ahead, please.
I'm sorry, I must have bumped my, I don't have something to say.
Okay. How about Brian?
So this is, again, back to 21. I'm wondering if in the wordsmithing we need to discuss overall societal costs as opposed to individual by individual costs. If we, looking at each individual type, might be able to make the argument that, you know, we'll just have a single national hub for all of these types of message and a single national hub for all of these types of messages, but the overall cost of maintaining those separate systems and asking providers to have to connect independently rather than leveraging a common statewide health information exchange as a pass-through may not pencil out. And I'm wondering if we need to emphasize those that economic analysis of sustainability.
Yep, we can. We can add a broad statement that notes the importance of balancing the cost to individuals versus to society, and the importance of managing the investment.
I think that just, you know, pushing the bill onto public health and saying, well, public health is using a lot more messages this year than last, so they have to pay more, is not the answer.
Okay, thanks. And John Kansky.
Yeah, thanks, Carolyn. I was just tracking with the earlier conversation about 21 with Arian's comment and Janet's comment, which I just wanted to offer. If there's any offline wordsmithing, I would be happy to help.
Thanks, John. I don't see any more hands. Are there any last comments from task force members on this area of funding mechanisms?
Hi, yeah, this is Danielle, and this is actually something that occurred to me in the previous comments, but I just wanted to raise the group. In the very first comments that we kind of looked over about the actors that should be involved and we added payer information, there may be a rationale to also offer any health information out of like the criminal justice system. And I'm just thinking about the lessons learned from the pandemic as those are hotbeds. And then a lot of that information, those individuals were released from that system into the public. So if there are opportunities to get health information from criminal justice as well, that could be a great player in public health. So inappropriate comments for the section, but I wanted to offer it as a consideration.
Thanks, Danielle. Seeing no more hands, I think we will move on to the next up. Bryant, you had one last comment.
Yeah, and maybe this isn't under funding, but better suited in policy. Segments of the healthcare industry, like criminal justice, the VA, and DOD that are outside of HHS purview, are those funding or policy levers that would be needed to get them to participate in these activities?
We can look at where that best fits. I know we had 10 recommendations in funding mechanisms and 10 in policy, and that's a lot, so I'm not pulling it off the top of my head, but we can look and see where that fits.
No, I've lost track of where VA and DOD ended up.
Okay. So, perfect segue into the next section that we'll look at, which is policy. And again, we have 10 recommendations, so we'll get some of those on the screen and then wait a minute or two for you to look at those and scroll down through the rest of them. And while we're moving the screen around to facilitate review, go ahead, John Kansky. I see your hand is up.
Yeah, Carolyn, this may be one of those personal differences that you referred to at the top of the call, and I'm totally okay to go along with whatever. Comment related to recommendation 25. Love this recommendation. The last bit seems to get a little bit prescriptive. We tend to recommend, in terms of policy, recommending to the ONC that they specify the what, not the how. What I'm referring to specifically, the second sentence, the guidance should be aligned with TEFCA to allow national networks and HIEs to serve as public health intermediaries. Absolutely experienced that firsthand. Constraint that data provided for public health may not be used for may only be used for those purposes may not be stored outside of public health unless the patient has explicitly authorized the use of that data. I find that to be a very prescriptive constraint. Maybe that could be made a little bit more a principle and not a specific.
I think we updated that language yesterday to get at some health equity concerns, but we can look at ways to wordsmith that to make it a bit less prescriptive.
Yeah, point being, I support where that's going philosophically, but there are unintended consequences sometimes where specific states might love to be able to do X, but it turns out that there's a rule that says you can't because of we don't have any way of getting patient authorization or something like that. I'm making that up.
Okay. We'll look at that. Thanks. Denise Love?
Yes, I am really concerned by that wording as well. I think that is harmful for perhaps research. I know states are doing a lot of linkage with de-identified data. I just think that handcuffs public health and research and needs to be reworded. And I'd be happy to work with, you know, others to reword it, but I think that is concerning to me.
Thanks, Denise. Let's go to Steve Eichner.
Thank you. I'm going to put on two separate hats here for a moment, one public health and one as a person who happens to have a particularly rare condition. I think one of the concerns here is that public health is not well represented in any of the TEFCA work groups or the TEFCA advisory groups, and looking at ensuring that public health's viewpoints are considered in any policy development involving those entities. Public health needs to be represented as part of that decision-making process. Where right now there's not a voice for public health at the table in that environment. And we've seen a number of cases where individuals' information is not necessarily being used expressly for the purpose for which it's gathered. So we're concerned a little bit about how information may be held and used for other purposes, but not necessarily as intended. Looking at a personal perspective as someone with a rare condition, I'd like to have control. It's data about me and is my data. I would like to be able to control what the use of that data is and not have a data release based on a generalized statement about, yes, you can use my data or populate my data or share my data from 6 years ago, and have that serve as a basis for releasing my information without me getting an accounting of where that data has been released to, for what purpose. So it's really, how do we ensure that the individual is included in understanding where their data is being used, where it's being shared, and for what purposes? So it comes back around to that individual engagement component. So I think that's an important consideration. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate that comment, and in particular consideration about individuals with rare diseases, as I have one myself and have seen how that plays out and understand the concerns. Just thinking broadly in terms of these comments, it sounds like perhaps the way to resolve this is to make a more broad statement that references the importance of addressing privacy and health equity concerns without trying to really be that prescriptive. And we can look at that language and see how to come up with something that's a bit more general and not creating the concerns that we've heard now.
I agree, and perhaps expanding it a little bit to include input from like National Organization of Rare Diseases and other stakeholder groups, so that whatever policies eventually developed is getting input from the affected populations or the affected stakeholders, and not as a unilateral or more narrowly viewed policy.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
So seeing no more hands, and given that we have 40, maybe 45 minutes at most to go through the remaining four sections, I'm going to suggest that we move on to the next area, which is infrastructure. I think we're making really, really good progress so far, and I know some of these areas we're coming into are things that we've just been discussing for a longer period of time, so I'm hoping that we're in a good spot to keep moving with the work. So this area...
Hi.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Carolyn. Sorry, I'm just talking to today, I guess. I just wanted to make, I completely agree with this point of just the privacy versus public use balance. I also wanted to just maybe add that as we kind of, there's some language peppered in about advisory committees and task force, and just kind of bridging off the comment of making sure that public health is involved, making sure that community engagement is involved in those advisory task force in the building of that, again, kind of getting to this, even this conversation here about that weighing of privacy and participation and best practices. So I don't want to derail it, but just wanted to add that comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Danielle. That's a good point. And I know we've mentioned community engagement elsewhere, but we can look at how to incorporate that here as well. So we now have the first few of the infrastructure guidelines on the screen. And I'll watch for hands for comments from our task force members. Go ahead, Denise Love.
I'm having some technical issues with Adobe today, sorry. On the dashboards, I mean, you know, do we mean dashboards or measures for the dashboards? Because, you know, are we standardizing the interface? I'm just trying to understand what public report dashboards, because I'm thinking content versus the interface, or is it both?
I believe the thinking was around the interface, just in the sense of a standard information presentation, certain specific information being easily accessed, and that ties in with the recommendation in the individual engagement area that talks about the importance of presenting information in standard formats so that it can be easily used by, you know, local leadership and governance as well. I don't think we were asking for...
And I think it's implied, as I reread it, standardized aggregate reporting. Okay, so not only the content, but the interface. Thank you.
Thanks. Go ahead, Bryant.
I'm wondering if this is just for clarity, recommendation 35 and recommendation 38, the master person indexing, often elsewhere referred to as master patient indexing. I wonder if those two recommendations should be put adjacent to each other, so that the linkage in patient matching and MPI isn't lost.
Yep, we can do that. We'll take care of that within the formatting. Go ahead, Clem.
Yeah, I have a comment on the interface that we just talked about. I don't know that we can do that. I mean, actually, you know, it depends on the space available and the importance people give to the various dimensions. There will come a point where it won't fit. Someone has to make choices. So I think it's a little prescriptive at this stage when no one's ever built a single one that's being used, described, defined that it has to be unified or the same.
We can look at the language. I think the intent is that there should be some standardized reporting, but we can revisit that language. Let's go to Denise Chrysler.
Hi, just wondering, are we just not able to pursue a national patient identifier under HIPAA, or do we have other ways around it that it's not so needed as it used to be? Because if it's in there, I missed it. I couldn't figure it out where it was.
This is Clem. There's new news on that from Congress.
This is Denise Levitt. States are doing a lot with patient matching, so maybe instead of a master patient index, which politically is difficult, this is Denise Levitt. I'm sorry to speak out of turn. Perhaps some standardization around the algorithms for patient matching and standardization of those and the data elements that feed those algorithms as another way to get around the MPI issue.
Thanks, Denise. I appreciate your stepping in with kind of the legal policy perspective. I know there's been quite a lot of back and forth about that, and I'm not expert enough to point out the explanation, but there are some barriers to that right now. Did you have an additional comment, Clem? Or
Yeah, about the master patient index and a universal identifier. I think yesterday the House passed the bill rescinding the restriction on doing studies of making one. The Senate didn't pass it, but there's some optimism that the sentiment has changed in the context of COVID and the importance of getting the right patient. And secondly, master patient index systems already exist, I believe, so I don't think we should be too worried about having them. And, you know, it's complicated. You got to be matching on top of it. And we already had a proposal to improve the content that would help matching.
Thanks, Clem. And one last comment I see from Arian. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you. As a suggestion, we might want to use the term record locator as opposed to master patient index. Master patient index implies some level of hierarchical identifier, whereas a record locator tells you where to go get a patient's data, and it's a more privacy sensitive approach to addressing this. Or we could use the term master patient or record locator as potential alternatives.
Thanks, Arian. That's a great point. So we will now move on to the situational awareness data section. And here we have 8 recommendations. So I will ask ONC to put some of those on the screen and then give us a minute to look at them before we scroll down.
Hi, Carolyn. This is Danielle. I wanted to just bring something to the infrastructure discussion as people are reviewing the other section. Just calling for consistency in some of the language. In number 35, you call out demographic information, and whatever phrase is used above when we name all of the different equity considerations, just to turn that phrase to be consistent. And then the other thing I just wanted to point out in this section there's a call out that talks about coordinating to ensure collaborating with partners, including in volunteer organizations, to assess. So whatever we're defining as healthcare partners, just making sure that's really inclusive, including like payers, because again, we have a lot of wealth of information. I just wanted to add those 2 comments to the conversation. So thank you.
Thanks, Danielle. We can replicate what's in recommendation number 11 in terms of that language. We'll probably do it offline after the meeting, so we can keep moving. But we do have that, so great. Thanks for that. And then, let's see, we're just scrolling through the situational awareness data, Rex. I don't see any hands up. Are there any comments? Nell, go ahead, please.
Yeah, just really quickly in relation to my comment on the screen. in recommendation 42, we talk about the fact that there are other systems that may contain this data. And then in recommendation 47, we say EHR should include inventory and sampling data. And so I just want to make sure we're clear on what is the actual expectation for an EHR versus another system that may already contain that data. If we're asking other systems to be able to report that, then requiring it within the EHR may not be necessary. I think the sub-bullet points beneath recommendation 47 makes sense. I just felt like the including inventory and staffing data somewhat contradicted other recommendations we had.
Okay. I was the person who added that comment in response to another comment, but we can revisit and look to align that so that it's clear. Are there other comments around this section?
Danielle.
And then we'll go to Bryant after you.
Apologize. I don't like skipping the line, but I can't. I'm literally can't see on this. Just making sure that as we talk about looking at in the situational awareness infrastructure, again, pulling in that language about under-resourced areas, just to ensure, because there's just kind of this conversation about calculating reporting and standard mechanisms, just making sure that we're being responsive and understanding that not all systems are up to date and have the funding and resources to accomplish this work. So just, again, calling that out as appropriate. Thank you.
Thanks, Danielle. And let's go to Bryant.
Yeah, I'll just to repeat, I think that some of these enhancements are analogous to the improvements in phase one and two, or phase two of meaningful use, where we needed providers to add things to their EMRs that weren't there before, and it may require another round of incentive programs to get those updated certified technologies in place. And my comment was just one of totally fine with where it is, but I made the recommendation early on that the syndromic surveillance section and the situational awareness section be adjacent to each other in the document. Fine if for, you know, chronological reasons it gets left here near the end, but it seems like that the two have synergy between each other and perhaps should be spoken about together.
We can look at that, Bryant. I know the document kind of evolved organically, and I think there may be other synergies as well. So we'll take a look at that. Go ahead.
So we get it if it needs to stay here.
Thanks. Go ahead.
I think, yeah, Bryant, just to your point, I do want to make sure, completely understand that as the situation evolves, we also need to evolve, or healthcare systems, EHRs need to evolve. I do want to just be careful about requiring duplicative reporting if there's other more appropriate sources of the data. And that was more where my comment was coming from. Since some of that information is already stored and accessed elsewhere, I want to make sure that there's a critical thinking about where the appropriate source of the data for some of this reporting may come from.
And that's exactly where I was thinking with the syndromic surveillance can be used to, if you know how many beds a hospital has available, can be used to kind of reverse engineer capacity. But sometimes two different data streams to tell you the same thing boosts your confidence that you've got the right number. So sometimes duplication is good. Sometimes it's confusing when it tells you different numbers.
Thanks, Bryant and Nell. We will look at that and see about wordsmithing the language to try to be general enough to cover the bases and not too prescriptive so that it's problematic. So we have just about a half an hour, 25 to 30 minutes left, and seeing no more hands or hearing comments, I will suggest that we move on to the next section, which has to do with individual engagement. And here we have 8 recommendations. The this will probably take a couple screens, so I'll give you a minute to read those and let ONC scroll through them a bit for us. And I see Arian has his hand up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, so I'm just, I certainly support the language, but in recommendation 52, where it says ONC should consider how HIPAA individual right to access fits with public health data, I think that's the wrong authority. I'd suggest ONC that we edit the language to ONC should work with OCR and CDC to provide a framework for individual right to access for public health data using HIPAA where appropriate. The point here is that many public health agencies are not HIPAA covered entities, and so HIPAA literally doesn't apply, but the right of public individual access may apply.
Thanks, Arian. I saw someone's hand up for a moment. Just down. Do we have other comments? Denise Love, go ahead, please.
Yes, my technology is not working today. And it's implied here that at the very beginning, up at the top, where it goes into, could you scroll up? Individual engagement. ONC should work with appropriate HHS stakeholders. But I need to plug states, and maybe it's implied HHS stakeholders, but states have done a lot with public reporting and educating and individual engagement through their governance systems on public health data. So I would hate to see something coming up from HHS that collides with what states have done for decades in their governance of public health data and its use. So I just think that needs to be woven in, including states or something of that nature, because, I spent 30 years with state governance and stakeholder use of public health data.
Thanks, Denise. We can make a note of that and look at ways to incorporate that. Are there other comments? I don't see any hands raised or people on the phone. Please go ahead. ONC, if you could scroll down a bit so we can see the lower recommendations. Great. Thank you. Well, seeing no hands or hearing any other comments, I think we may as well move on to the immunization section. Here we have 7 recommendations, so that'll take a couple of screens to go through those. We'll just take a minute to look at them. And I see you have your hand up. No, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to address my comment on here as well. And certainly understanding that there are different state laws, recommendation 61 seems like it's a good goal where we are trying to create a more prioritized set of immunization data elements that maybe is more inclusive of some of those discrepancies that have to happen. But I think the goal would still be maybe this is my opinion and we move on from it, but would still be to try and standardize wherever possible and create that prioritized list that is inclusive of some of the state variants, but also helps to standardize some of the data elements that may not be required across all states or required by law. And so when it comes to the language specifically about CDC and state required data elements, I think if we could refer to the data elements that are identified as part of Recommendation 61, that was what my comment was trying to focus on, is still having, understanding there are some discrepancies due to law, trying to create a more standard data element list that would be sufficient across all jurisdictions.
Thanks, Nell. We'll look at that. I know we were moving in a lot of comments rapidly in the last day or two, so we can look at that again and align that. I see Bryant has his hand raised. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just, from a semantics, I think, you know, CDC may have recommended data elements, but it's the states that determine what the actual requirements are. So I think that's part of the, you know, the legal framework. And I defer to Denise Chrysler to tell us, you know, what the proper language is to differentiate.
I'm sorry, Brian. I was reading a particular recommendation, and
no,
I didn't hear what you said,
no,
except I heard my name. Which recommendation?
We're talking about, I think we're talking about 61, if we could scroll down a little bit.
ONC should work with CDC, that one? Well, most of them start that way, okay.
Yeah. So the so prioritization of immunization data elements, it's states first. I mean, they can work with CDC to make recommendations, but it's the states, territories, tribes that really need, that are the authority in terms of requiring elements. Am I correct?
CDC provides funding. And as a condition for that funding, they have functional standards. The standards have a core set of data elements. Some are required. Some are optional. Many of the data elements, even that are required, such as race and ethnicity, don't make their way into state law or policy or having the data elements. So I saw this as consistent with how the system exist in the sense of CDC has its funding lever, and it's been more, at least from my viewpoint, as to whether the requirements actually flow down and get implemented. And I have read laws that that list the data that states are allowed to collect with regard to immunizations, and some are much more restrictive than others. A lot of them just defer to the health department to define the data elements. So was that what you're asking, Bryant?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I just want to make sure that we're not recommending that CDC do something that they don't have the authority to do. That CDC can make the recommendation or provide funding to ensure compliance, but it's actually STLTs that need to be coordinated with or collaborated with in order to make
right.
It go into it.
The jurisdictions are the ones that actually implement whatever data elements are collected.
And maybe this is more appropriate in a certification context. The goal of my comment was understanding that there are state law where state law does not restrict or require a specific data element. Trying to have consistency across the other data elements wherever possible will help with implementation and maintenance costs for healthcare organizations, especially ones that operate in multiple jurisdictions. So I think that's really the intention of the comment, is just making sure that there is consistency where possible, understanding that there is not always, you know, it's not always possible to be consistent across all jurisdictions.
And I see Jen Kansky's hand. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I have a comment and I think a question about recommendation 64, which I really like the way I'm interpreting it. I want to make sure I'm interpreting it correctly. My suggestion was going, or my question was going to be, can we add comma and HIEs at the end of the, for example, data reporting systems, death registries, and HIEs? But I didn't know what the words within the walls of public health meant. That's comment question number one. And I didn't know if the word culturally was necessary to convey the meaning of the recommendation. Anybody know?
Yeah, this is Bryant. It's probably, that may be coming from some comments that I made. It's the public health culture, and culture, I agree, culturally is probably the wrong, especially with the health equity focus earlier, is probably the wrong word to use here. It's really referring to historic silos within public health that need to be broken down, that the immunization program and the communicable disease programs are classically in different departments and different people and different systems. So getting those systems to talk to each other within a public health agency can oftentimes require change management and thinking about breaking down operational norms that may not have any legal reason for being in place, but have just, you know, it's always been done that way. How do you undo those norms to recognize what's possible?
Sorry, so I think I get that, and I that sounds right to me. I don't know if I'm suggesting a second recommendation or just adding to this one, because when I saw that this recommendation suggested engaging the Center for Public Health Law, which sounds right to me, and later it says other systems and organizations, what I was thinking of are the unintended policy barriers that prevent public health departments from having the latitude to share their immunization data or interoperating their IISs with organizations like HIE. So if that's compatible, for me, that's accomplished by just saying and HIEs in the series at the end, but I don't want to change the meaning of the recommendation from your standpoint, Bryant.
No, I think, so maybe it's within the walls and outside the walls. So I hear what you're saying. It is, we kind of first need to break down the barriers internally before we can start to successfully collaborate externally. But
and I see Denise Love has her hand up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm just wondering, for the prior discussion, instead of stating disease reporting and death registries, because I agree there's more than that, didn't earlier the term, you know, the public health ecosystem or information ecosystem. And so instead of just specifying disease registries, et cetera, is sharing, let's see, across the appropriate data systems with across the public health data ecosystem. And that, you know, is broader because I think for hospital discharge data, it could also be an effective linkage on outcomes. So I hate to be too prescriptive, but we used that term earlier, and I don't know if that's appropriate to insert here.
Thanks, Denise. Let's go to Denise Chrysler.
Thanks. Sorry, I can't figure out how to do comments on Google Docs. So if you're talking about the organization I'm with in number 64, it's the Network for Public Health Law rather than Center for Public Health Law, with everything capped, or not the four, but Network for Public Health
and law with a capital L.
Thanks, Denise. We'll make that change and be sure that correction is involved. Steve Eichner, go ahead, please. You might be on mute, Steve.
Do you hear me?
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, it should probably be vital statistics systems rather than death registries at the end of it.
Thanks.
Just because that's reflective of both ends of it, and many public health departments would refer to it as vital statistics systems rather than a death registry. And probably don't want disease reporting systems as capitalized, just in general.
Thanks. We'll fix that. I don't see any additional hands raised. Are there any comments about this section on the phone?
And actually, this is just a minute. Probably should be from fully enabling interoperability between immunization information systems and other systems. Fully interoperating just feels a little bit weird.
Okay.
Not from a concept standpoint, but just from a functional standpoint.
We can update that. And I see John Kansky has his hand up. Go ahead, please.
Yep. Sorry, not trying to beat this one too dead. My suggestion to add and HIEs is not winning the day, could we add the word external before organizations? I'm trying to incorporate Brian's meaning and the one I'm hearing myself and others suggest, which is interacting immunization data with other internal systems and external organizations. I don't know if that captures what we're all trying to say.
Or across the public health information ecosystem, you know, broadly, including HIEs.
Yeah, I like that direction.
I think it's a wonderful aspirational. I think one of the challenges will be in, you know, the legal frameworks. Like our immunization system, for example, people who access it have to have an agreement in place, and not all members of the HIE may have signed that agreement. So it becomes challenging to control access.
And Steve Eichner, go ahead, please.
I appreciate what Brian said, and we're in a similar position. To me, it's almost a recommendation 65 to look external to public health or external to other governmental systems, because there's a different set of criterion or a different set of factors that come into play. No less important, mind you, but a different set of factors. But I've got one set of challenges in terms of enabling sharing within my agency. It's another set of challenges to share externally. And I would not want to necessarily conflagrate the two.
All right. Thanks, Steve. So seeing no other hands and hearing no additional comments, I think we have reached the conclusion of our review of the recommendations. I know that there was some information gathered in the homework that pertained to topics we did not get to, and I want to alert everyone that feedback is being included in an appendix as additional feedback on related topics that we didn't get to discuss. We didn't discuss them, so we would not bring them forward as recommendations, but that information and your efforts have not been lost, and they are there to inform those who use the product of our work. And thank you for that. So the process for us today is to agree that we have consensus to send this to the HITACH for presentation and a vote there. We would not vote on it here. I see we do have about 5 minutes before we need to get into public comment, so if anyone has any additional last thought that you'd like to share briefly, we can do that before we kind of formalize that we have agreed to move this forward. Does anyone have a comment? I don't see any hands, but I want to be sure we have this one last moment as a group. I'll give it another few seconds. Janet, do you have any last thoughts about the work we've done today or other things to share at this point?
Thanks, Carolyn, and thank you all so much for your participation. I think we did identify a few areas for additional attention and follow-up, and just would encourage folks that either volunteered to do things, that we do have a timeline of trying to get our set of recommendations to the full HITACH tomorrow. So really want to let folks know that we're going to be trying to get these different pieces finalized over the course of today. And if someone feels that they don't have time to work on something that was discussed and we identified you, if you could just let us know too, so that we can really be sure that we're moving forward in a way that does represent consensus of the group, and really appreciate everybody's work.
Thanks, Janet. I wholeheartedly agree, and I appreciate everything everyone has done. I see Bryant, your hand is up if you wanted to make a last brief comment. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is just one of trying to think ahead towards how this document would be utilized both by ONC and by national audiences. And I encourage ONC staff to put some thought into the sequence of how each of these sections are laid out in the, you know, a table of contents, and that perhaps, you know, finishing with funding or policy makes more sense than jumping around to different programmatic areas. I think giving you all leverage to make the document make sense and be well received. I'm very happy with how much we've been able to accomplish and get in there. So 64 recommendations, that's amazing.
We've accomplished a great deal, Bryant, and your work was a big part of that. We thank you for that. Denise Love, go ahead, please.
Yes. Yeah, thank you first for your leadership and ONC staff and all. But this is just my question. It doesn't have to be incorporated, but as I read through these recommendations, I'm trying to get a sense for the timelines or the transition. I mean, this is not going to happen overnight. Do we have a timeline or deadline for recommendations that by X date, and maybe I missed that, that these should be aspirational and put in place? I'm just kind of feeling the urgency of now, but also the reality of fire is not, you know, pervasive throughout the industry. So there is this transitional time.
I will leave
if that
question.
Makes any sense at all.
No, it does. And I will leave that to our ONC leads to answer the timeline.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, Denise, can you just
quickly repeat that, Wallace? I know we're going to the public comment slide, but if you can repeat the question, I was responding to another comment in the chat.
You mean my comment?
Yes.
I just have, as I read through these, I was trying to get a sense of the general timeline, you know, for these recommendations to come to fruition, and if there was a transition period, you know, and if there's phases or stages or tiers for implementation, because I have a sense this is a long-term aspirational vision, but some of these things could be put into play right away and others will take some time. And I just was trying to get a sense of that as I read through these wonderful recommendations.
Yeah, so I think that's right. I think, you know, there will be certainly, and I'll kind of speak to the longer process or the process kind of after these go through HITAC as well. So, you know, we will bring these to HITAC next week. HITAC will vote and hopefully approve them at that time, at which point they will be sent to the national coordinator for review, you know, and the national coordinator will also pass these along to the rest of the executive order work group to review and to incorporate in some of the and some of the work that that is happening kind of coinciding with this work of the task force to support the executive order from the president on this work. In terms of specific implementation timelines, you know, that will kind of remain to be seen. I think as you mentioned, there are some that can be, you know, implemented relatively quickly and others that may take years to come to fruition. But ultimately it'll really be kind of playing by ear in terms of which ones are accepted and which part of HHS those may be fed to support those. So in other words, no specific timelines that we can identify at this point, but know that all these will be read and seriously considered and will be feeding into some other work supporting the executive order.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brett. So operator, can we go to the line for public comment, please?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate the line is in a queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for a participant using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your headset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Okay, thank you. Carolyn?
Thanks, Cassandra. You've all been listening to me talk a great deal today, so I'll keep this really short. I just want to, again, express my deep gratitude for all your hard work. This is an incredibly important area, and this is a time, I think, when our work can really make a difference in what happens going forward and in the ways that we can do more and better support all types of public health responses and better enable clinicians and people in the broad healthcare ecosystem to advance the health and good outcomes in their patients. And I want to express my deep gratitude to all the task force members and to our ONC partners who've helped to stand up this committee, and also to my co-chair, Janet. It's been great to see how much we could accomplish all working together as a team. Thank you.
Thanks, Carolyn. And I will just echo on behalf of all of us who've been working on this, and we are very appreciative of everyone's time and work. And I think we have a huge list of things. And now we also realize that there's a lot to do. It's one thing to identify that the work needs to be done, and then another piece to actually start chunking this off and doing the work. And so Thank you all for your time here, but also look forward to your expertise and engagement as work in these areas starts to take place. So thank you so much. And thank you to ONC and to ONC staff for also the amazing amount of time that they have put in. And Carolyn, wonderful to work with you on this. Thank you all.
So from the from the ONC team, thank you guys for pushing this work forward. We know it was on a tight timeline. And we so appreciate the member work on this and you guys' dedication with everything else you do in your lives. So we know this is a volunteer and, you know, on behalf of us at ONC here, thank you so much for your work on this. So if there's no additional comments, Carolyn and Janet, we could close out for the afternoon.
I have nothing to share. I will just say we will ask ONC to send out the agenda for next week's HITAC meeting and the slides so that you can follow along. If you'd like to listen in as a member of the public, that would be great.
We will do that. All right. I think we're done for the day. Thank you, guys. Have a great afternoon and enjoy your weekend.